Welcome to the Talk to Your Pharmacist podcast. We're dispensing stories of success from across the continuum of care. I'm your host, Hillary Blackburn. Thanks for joining us to learn from leaders throughout the pharmacy industry. Hey, listeners, in this episode, we'll talk about pharmacy interoperability, persistent challenges, and opportunities. And if you're interested in hearing more about what I'm doing with maternal health, check out www.rxformom.com and reach out if you are a pediatric pharmacist or pharmacist interested in maternal health. I'm looking for others who are also passionate about that and want to help with some content. Or maybe you're also a mom and have questions just like I did. So reach out. Let me know what you think about this project. All right. So today we have a special guest on the Talk to Your Pharmacist podcast. Our guest, Dr. Colin Banas, is an MD, MSHA, who is the Chief Medical Officer for Dr. First. Dr. Banas is an internal medicine hospitalist and the former Chief Medical Information Officer for BCU Health System in Richmond, Virginia, prior to stepping down after 15 fulfilling years to pursue consulting. He is proud to have testified before the U.S. Senate and the Office of the National Coordinator on the topic of Health IT and the Meaningful Use Program, and is a former Health IT Fellow for the ONC. His interests center the role of big data and analytics on patient outcomes and on novel forms of clinical decision support, those that are outside of the realm of traditional rules and alerts, and include real-time dashboarding and intuitive usability designs. He also helped spearhead the VCU effort to participate in the Open Notes Initiative, where patients have access to their clinical documentation in real time. In 2017, Dr. Banas was humbled to receive the HIMSS AMDIS Award for Physician Executive of the Year from his peers. Well, Dr. Banas, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you as a guest on the Talk to Your Pharmacist podcast.
Thank you for having me. And I can't believe you read all of that stuff. I really need to trim that down. Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry.
Oh, well, I think that our listeners it is always so impressive to hear the different bios, but I love to kind of even dig a little deeper and just hear, you know, a little bit more about the journey, the pivot, like what led you from pursuing clinical internal medicine to the shift towards technology?
It's crazy. It's kind of a right place, right time story for me. So, I finished my residency at Virginia Commonwealth University in 2005, and I didn't know what was next. And so I was very comfortable in the inpatient setting. So I was like, oh, I'll be a hospitalist. And I did. I was an active hospitalist, but I also had a colleague who had enrolled in the Masters of Health Administration program that you can get simultaneously while, you know, holding down a full-time job. You could get a master's in the course of, you know, 2 years. And it was through the university, so it was essentially free. I mean, it was undeniably inexpensive. So I did that, and, you know, it was painful. I tell everybody who's going through these executive master's programs, like, it's going to kick your butt, but it'll be worth it in the long run. But it was basically, you know, you started to meet other executives, or I wasn't an executive yet, but I was meeting executives, and I was meeting executives from my health system who were doing the program as well. And next thing you know, they're saying, hey, we need somebody for this, utilization management or care coordination role. Would you be interested? You know, we'll protect 20% of your time, et cetera, et cetera. So I started doing these other roles in health administration. And, you know, right at 05, we were still on paper, but we had an EMR. We were actually, we had implemented Cerner. We were doing inpatient order entry, things like that, but we were still doing a whole bunch on paper. And my colleague and mentor basically said, this is dumb, you know, and he was a tech nerd like me. Like, I love computers. I build them. I've always had an interest in technology. And he went to the dean and said, we'd like to do something to get clinical input into the electronic record. We would like we'd like for this thing to take off. You're not using it right. And the dean bit and gave us a whole bunch of money to form the Office of Clinical Transformation, the OCT. And so just like that, I was the associate CMIO for an organization that didn't even have a CMIO, you know, the day before. And so, you know, fast forward a couple of years, my colleague leaves and I'm next man up. And so for over 10 years, I was the chief medical information officer for Virginia Commonwealth. And, you know, never in undergrad or med school, I didn't think I was going to be a CMIO. It was just right place, right time, and an interest. And I know I'm rambling here, but it's fun to get the stage for stuff like this. It's the perfect intersection of the things I love, which was, you know, clinical medicine, taking care of patients, but also the application of technology. Mm-hmm. And so did that for, you know, as you mentioned, you know, over a decade, and then about 2019 made the jump over to Dr. First to help with innovation and strategy. And it's been a wild ride, but I'm loving it.
Fascinating. I think it's so fun to hear the journey. Well, tell us a little bit more about what is Dr. First and, you know, what your role is there and what kind of things Dr. First does.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, I'm the CMO for Dr. First. It's interesting. Dr. First started as an e-prescribing company. And it actually, it's almost a parallel track to my informatics journey. So in the year 2000, our founder, Jim Chen, had a vision to, you know, utilize VPN technology and existing EHRs and do something that wasn't really done yet, which was e-prescribing. And it was slow going for many years, but e-prescribing is still the core of the business. We touch about a quarter of the prescriptions that route in the country on a daily basis. We have integrations into a lot of EHRs, so whether they realize it or not, a lot of their scripts are flowing through Dr. First pipes. Mm-hmm. But as you can imagine, over the course of 2+ decades in e-prescribing, we also have made a lot of relationships with pharmacies and pharmacists and EHRs and payers and PBMs. And so mm-hmm. from that e-prescribing core blossomed a whole additional suite of solutions around what I call intelligent medication management. So we have things that help you with medication reconciliation and patient safety. We have, we pioneered price transparency. We were the first to do it, actually, showing the doctor what the copay for your patient will be in that moment of time and offering them alternatives. We did EPCS before anybody had ever done it. We did that up in Massachusetts. And so there's just, you know, the core of e-prescribing and then just boom, all of these other things around the medication journey. So it's, you know, at the core of our mission is make it a joyous experience for patients and providers to get on and stay on therapy. Like that's like how I can distill it to like maybe one sentence.
Wow. Yes. Well, that is fascinating. And, you know, since this is geared more towards our pharmacy audience, maybe we'll dive into that a little bit. So you mentioned e-prescribing, which of course the audience is probably pretty familiar with how prescriptions arrive in the queue at their, you know, the community pharmacy for order entry and filling those and getting those ready for patients as they're leaving from the doctor's office, coming over to the pharmacy to get that filled. So, you know, what are some of the things that you've seen change along the way with that, or some of the things to look forward to? You know, one of the downsides, of course, is the connectedness with the pharmacy to the health system. Tell us a little bit more about how, you know, you all have been able to help break down maybe some of those barriers and just help improve that doctor to pharmacy or health system to pharmacy interaction.
Yeah, I mean, that's the mission, right? I think it's time for a new version of interoperability between, you know, this medication management life cycle. You know, we've certainly come a long way from when I was writing out paper prescriptions and handing them to my patients and You know, we almost take e-prescribing for granted now, but there's still some things that are missing from it. You know, changing the script isn't the easiest, or flipping to a different pharmacy due to availability isn't seamless. You know, getting the doctor and the pharmacist to connect on, you know, potential therapeutic alternatives or, you know, possible drug interactions. It's not as seamless as it is in other, you know, industries. You know, I always point to, you know, banking and aviation and shopping even. Like, look how far interconnectedness has come on those platforms. And yet we're still struggling on the medicine side. It's not to say that it's not getting better. I just think it's not getting better fast enough. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that Dr. First is really committed to, is how can we innovate in this space to make this experience not only more pleasant for both the patient and the provider, but also, you know, safer. And how can we measure that, right? How can we make sure that we're getting the outcomes that we need to get patients on and keep them on therapy? So it's an interesting time. There's definitely some new proposals in the interop space around, you know, pharmacy to payer connection, payer to patient connection, prior authorization, things like that. So I think we're at a tipping point, in my opinion.
Amazing. So what would you say are some of the biggest challenges to overcome at this point?
I think the ecosystem as it exists now is really hard to navigate. You know, different payers have different interfaces. And, you know, when it comes to something like, you know, price transparency, you're not always guaranteed to get the price for the patient that you have in front of you, because maybe the platform you've implemented doesn't have the same coverage. It's just, and then, you know, patients trying to navigate, you know, well, what is my copay going to be, and what are the alternatives, and do I need to go look for a discount card, or do I need to enroll into a specialty hub, and how do those hub services work? Just, it's just hard. And I don't think it needs to be like that. And so at a minimum, let's reduce the friction along all of these points of interaction so that we can make the experience better. And so that's really what I'm looking forward to. But I think you would agree, I think your listeners would agree, like, the ecosystem is just really, really hard to navigate. And we do a lot of kludgy workarounds that we just sort of, we sort of take it like, well, that's the way it is. Oh, I need it. Let me submit a false claim to see what the copay is going to be. You know, mm-hmm. Oh, and let me error that back out. Like, that's just weird. Mm-hmm. And it's time, and it's expense, and it's, and to me, it's unnecessary. Like, come on, we're in 2024. Let's rethink this thing.
Exactly. What's the copay? Well, I've got to run it all the way through first.
Yes.
Exactly. Makes no sense.
And then the patient can't afford it, so you reshelve it 2 weeks later, but the record might not reflect that right away. So the patient shows back in the ER, and it looks like they filled that medication, but they haven't. Like, mm-hmm. It's very hard to navigate, and it's very hard to find the source of truth at the moment that you need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, it's always important to get all of the different stakeholders at the table and everyone playing nice together, which it's good to have, you know, people participating, but there can also always be, you know, you have conflicting interests, and which can sometimes be a challenge in data sharing and all of that. Who have been some of the, you know, major players who've stepped up and are helping to work on this initiative with you all?
So I'll tell you, this is where the CMS and ONC comes into play. So CMS, you know, if you and your audience remember way back to maybe 2010, and you alluded to it earlier on my bio, the Meaningful Use Program, right? Mm-hmm. Let's get everybody off of paper. Let's get them onto electronic medical records, and we'll have this, you know, beautiful ecosystem of ones and zeros flying through the ether, and, you know, everything will be great. And they went with the carrot and the stick approach, right? They spent $30 billion over the course of the first 4 or 5 years to promote adoption. And then, you know, the money ran out, and then now you're getting penalties if you're not doing it, you know, in certain circumstances. And so you're seeing the same thing play out, I think, in the interoperability space, which is, okay, guys, we've sort of given you the last 10 years to get this interoperability thing right, and you still haven't, right? It's better. We definitely have, you know, some transactions occurring, and I can get a CCD, and maybe I can send a direct message between providers, and maybe even, you know, get a message to my pharmacist, sort of. It's not seamless, but it's still not where it needs to be. And so CMS and the ONC step in, and they start making rules. They say, okay, you're not getting there fast enough, so now we're going to define it, and we're going to set a time limit. And, you know, so for this most recent set of rules, it's like, you know, 2026. That's actually not that far away. You know, people are like, oh, whatever. No, like, you need to be working on this stuff now, because it takes a while to figure it all out. And so, you know, it's pretty rare to, you know, compliment the hand of the government, you know, for a lot of this stuff. But actually, I think they do deserve some kudos, because they're guiding, they're sort of pushing us along into interoperability. So I want to give them a thumbs up. And then, you know, in some of the more innovative ways, we're actually working directly with a lot of the pharmacy dispense software systems to say, how can we rethink the connection between the provider and you? How can we give you a better payload? What do you need from us that you're not getting currently? You know, do you need diagnosis codes? Do you need a clinical summary? And then, you know, you at the pharmacy level, what do you have of value to me, the prescriber, to me, the health system, that I'm not currently getting from you? Maybe it's, you know, a more accurate dispense history rather than adjudicated claims. I don't care what the claim says. I want to know what went out the door. Mm-hmm. I want to know whether they paid cash or coupon, or you gave it away. I need to know. Or, you know, maybe something as innovative as inventory, right? I'm in the ER at 2 a.m. and I want to write for this antibiotic, but it's not in stock. And it's not the sort of thing that can wait till tomorrow. So I need to pick, you know, your other pharmacy down the street. Something like, you know, these are potentially controversial things, but they're conversations worth having. And that's the ecosystem that we're trying to bring together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gosh, I'm even just thinking of, you know, whenever I was a student and resident, on my ER rotations, we were doing med recs for patients as they were coming in, because of course, you know, if it's an emergency, you aren't going to have your medical card on you on like, oh, here's all my prescriptions that I'm on. So you're having to do some of that with the patient on, you know, their recall, or calling the pharmacy, which pharmacy do you use? I mean, goodness, that would be so helpful to have that already pulled in. Or, you know, just that the doctor would know, like, yes, they're skipping, they're having to skip doses, but they're too embarrassed to tell me. And so that's why their blood pressure is still high. You know, they're having their tablets or exactly.
Yep. So we actually have solutions that I mentioned earlier, that we have solutions in the med rec, med safety space. We do something akin to what you're just talking about there in terms of serving up a more complete medication history, but also, no tech conversation is complete these days without mentioning AI, but we actually have an AI layer that cleans up the data to make it consumable by the receiving system. So it fills in the missing pieces and it matches the nomenclature to your system. So maybe, you know, you guys use POQD, but my system uses, you know, by mouth daily. You know, little mm-hmm. stuff like that doesn't always match up, but we can, and we've been doing this for a decade, we can apply AI to make that process easier on the prescribing side, on the med rec side. And actually, we can also use that same software to clean up the inbound prescriptions. Mm-hmm. So, and we've actually done this with a couple of pharmacy vendors where, you know, rather than having you rekey it into your pharmacy system, we can intercept it and say, well, your system is expecting this, so we're going to reformat it and land it in the right spots. Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, to the layperson, they would have said, oh, that already happens automatically. No, there's so much manual touching And that's where errors occur, right? That's where the one becomes an 11 or the Q6 becomes Q16, you know, whatever it is, this stuff happens. And this is the Swiss cheese where, you know, eventually it gets all the way to the patient, and this is how patients get hurt. Mm-hmm. And that's really one of my passions when I joined the company was medication safety and patient outcomes.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That makes so much sense. Well, I have to rekey everything whenever it was typed in or selected from the prescriber at the get-go. It should be just popping up, and that would take one more thing out of the pharmacy workflow. So.
Yeah. We've done that successfully with a couple of pharmacy vendors. We call it smart pharmacy actually.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Well, fascinating. So how, you know, what are ways that, you know, you're looking for pharmacy partners or people to be aware of what you guys do? Or are y'all looking for how can people best help Dr. First to kind of continue the mission to help better alleviate some of that friction?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of ways. One, you know, we're an open book. Go to our webpage, you know, visit me on X/Twitter, whatever we're calling it these days, or LinkedIn. But at a minimum, I love having conversations with pharmacists. How can we help pharmacists have a bigger voice in the patient care, you know, industry, you know, and we're seeing some states, you know, get really, you know, elevating pharmacy privileges, letting them do things like prescriptions and immunizations and things. We need more of that. And so I'm always interested in hearing, you know, from the frontline pharmacists, whether they're in the hospital setting, the outpatient setting, or even the retail. Like, I want to hear what's painful. I want to hear, you know, what could be better. I want to hear where you think technology has a play. And, you know, those are conversations that we are always looking to have, because that's what fuels innovation for Dr. First. So please, you know, bring it on. Good, bad, the ugly. I would love to hear about it. And I would love the feedback.
Yeah. Well, that's a great offer. I'm sure that people are thinking, gosh, I hate having to call the insurance company and wait on hold for, you know, that, gosh, like the prior auths, and we haven't even touched on that, but just so many different ways to improve the system. So it's great that, you know, there are people and companies that are dedicated to that mission, and excited to see what, you know, as we get more, even more sophisticated with data, I guess acceptance and just like the technology, gosh, we've changed so much from going from paper charts and just, you know, 20 years or so.
Yep.
What the next decade will hold. Well, Dr. Banas, one of the questions that I love to ask all of our guests is, what is some advice that you would tell your younger self or for others out there who are just getting started in their career?
Oh, this is back to my, you know, what do I want to be when I grow up, when I was finished my residency? It was make yourself available, like participate in those committees. That's where the stuff happens. And so much of my career trajectory was organic from just being involved. So, you know, I could have closed off and just been a, you know, grinded out hospitalist and, you know, work my seven on, seven off, whatever it is. But, you know, I said, well, what else could I be doing? And I got involved in these committees, and I went and got another degree. And that's where you never know what interaction is about to, you know, put you on a different trajectory. Yeah. It is like that. And so, you know, try not to have preconceived notions about what your career is going to be. It's good to have a goal. Obviously you need goals to sort of, you know, define the parameters of how you're going to go about things, but don't be afraid to pivot. I've pivoted a couple times in my career, and I'm really fulfilled. And you know, who knows what's next? And that's the fun thing about healthcare. And that's the fun thing about informatics. So just make yourself available and get involved.
Absolutely. Well, so great to have you as a guest on the Talk to Your Pharmacist podcast.
Thank you for having me. I love it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Talk to Your Pharmacist, produced by the Pharmacy Advisory Group. If you liked this episode, let us know by subscribing to the podcast, rating, and reviewing it. Share it with friends. And if you want to be a guest or know a pharmacist leader who has a great story to tell, connect with me, Hillary Blackburn, on LinkedIn and check out our Facebook page,